You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Scott Spencer is a two-time National Book Award nominee and the author of 9 novels, including Endless Love, which has been called a generational touchstone, has sold over 2 million copies worldwide. His latest novel, Willing, is about a down-and-out freelance writer who agrees to go on an all-expenses-paid international sex tour in the hopes of landing a story out of it. The book is published by Echo, and I'm very pleased to welcome Scott Spencer back to the show today. So it's a pleasure to see you.
It's great to see you too, Len.
Do tours like the one Avery Jankowski goes on really exist?
There's all kinds of sex tours that go to all kinds of places all around the world. There's sex tours for men, and there's even sex tours for women. They go to places like South Asia. They go to Latin America. They go to countries that were part of the former Soviet bloc. They go wherever people want to go.
And in this case, Northern Europe.
In this case, Northern Europe. Now, for the sake of my novel, I made up this sex tour. I made it very, very deluxe. I had them on a private jet. I had the tariff be really sky high, as $135,000 in order to go onto this tour.
Only Elliot Spitzer could afford something like that.
He could, and he still can.
Would it be indiscreet to ask how you've heard about these sex tours?
I actually first heard about these sex tours at a funeral. And I was sitting around with my little ham sandwich, remembering the deceased, and someone who I knew through a second cousin, who was also sort of vaguely related to the deceased, started talking to me about his recent tour of Thailand. And this was a man whose wife was really 25 feet across the room, who had a little business that he ran, and he seemed completely happy to talk about it. And it wasn't just a one-time occurrence for him. It was something that he had done on a fairly regular basis, and he was looking forward to the next one, and his comfort with it and the absolute pleasure he had in remembering it and discussing it with me and looking forward to the next one really caught my imagination.
Avery Jankowski is a 37-year-old Manhattanite. He's a freelancer who writes frequently for magazines. What kinds of stories does he write?
He'll write whatever people ask him to write. He'll write for in-flight magazines. He'll do celebrity profiles, but he also enjoys doing a kind of participatory journalism. He'll put himself in harm's way and try to write about it. He'll work at a puppy mill or do something that's a little outre and then write about it.
Have you had that kind of experience as well? Because in addition to your 9 novels, you've also written for magazines like Rolling Stone, The New Yorker, GQ. And I was assuming that on some level, not the sex tour level, that you've drawn on some of your journalism experience in the creation of this book.
Well, I've drawn on the feeling of being a journalist and that feeling of being you and not you, that feeling of that false front that Janet Malcolm talks about, that seduction and betrayal aspect of being a journalist. I've been a little luckier in my career than Avery has. Avery's career just has never taken off, and I've given him a much harder road to hoe than I've had myself.
Does writing as a journalist come from a different part of the brain than writing a novel?
I think it comes from a very different part of the brain. And for me, writing as a journalist is really an attempt to get away from the novelist brain. It's to get out of the world of the imagination, get out of the world of going deeply into yourself and revealing yourself to yourself and then revealing yourself to others and just going out and seeing how other people live.
Avery admits that he actively pursues the women he's attracted to and stays with them for a while, and then he gets bored. He's not the most admirable protagonist you could have invented.
No, I don't really find myself drawn to admirable protagonists as a rule. I like to find somebody who's questionable and then see how they can reveal themselves and maybe even improve themselves. And in order for some things to happen, people have to be a little bit headstrong and a little bit heedless.
And that was surely true of the last novel, A Ship Made of Paper, where your protagonist fell in love with a married woman who also, which also brought up a whole bunch of racial issues.
Yes, I think that that a protagonist is always blind, just like Don Quixote is pictured with a blindfold over his eyes. Because if you could really see the consequences of what you were about to do, there's probably very little that you would do. And so in order to have somebody in motion and have somebody reveal how we live in our times or the nature of humanity, you need them to be a little bit blind.
But he's not a tragic hero. He's just a flawed hero.
He's just a flawed hero.
He meets Deirdre, who is 10 years his junior, and they move in together. But she winds up cheating on him with a hunky guy named Osip. Why would Deirdre have been attracted to Avery in the first place?
I think that Avery is really good company. I think Avery is a good listener. I think Avery is a nice-looking guy. He's very tender. And
until he gets bored with you.
Well, she wasn't really looking for a long-term relationship with Avery in the first place. I mean, she may have, further down the line, wished that they could stay together, but she's really in graduate school. She's not really looking to set up her entire life. She's looking for company.
The fact that Avery lives in New York City seems to play a key role in his loneliness. In fact, the apartment he shares with Deirdre is located near Times Square, where there are a lot of sex shops. Do you see New York City as a lonely city? You don't live here.
I live here a little bit of the time, so, and I've lived here off and on, you know, since 1969. And I think that New York, of course, is a lonely city. All cities are lonely cities, but now I live out in the country, and that's lonely, too. People are lonely. People are isolated from each other. I think that New York City and other great big metropolis, world capitals, have a special kind of loneliness because there's so many people around, and there's so much presumption of joy and engagement that you can feel that you're just failing life every time you walk out of your apartment.
My guest is Scott Spencer, whose latest novel is called Willing, and it's published by Echo. So how does Avery arrange to get sent out on an all-expenses-paid sex tour?
Avery's lucky enough to have an Uncle Ezra. We should all have an Uncle Ezra in our lives. And Uncle Ezra has a very outre friend named Lincoln Castle, who he's known since college. And along the line, he's loaned Lincoln Castle a little bit of money, and then Lincoln Castle sort of disappeared, gone through one identity after another, and has now resurfaced as the captain of this ship who's going to onto this sex tour. And as a way of repaying Ezra for past favors, he's comped him for this sex tour. And when Uncle Ezra learns that his beloved nephew Avery is heartbroken and has been jilted, he gives him his place in the tour.
Is the possibility of coming up with a book the only reason that he agrees to go?
Well, that's the reason he can tell himself. I think that he certainly would need that reason. We always need a reason why we do things.
Something higher than something the baser higher reasons than that may, you know, really drive us.
You know, the last time I was here, Len, it was the beginning of the war in Iraq. And now I'm here on the fifth anniversary of the, and in those 5 years I wrote this book, and it was very much about the stories we tell ourselves in order to go to a foreign place and do what we always wanted to do anyhow.
Mm-hmm. So he winds up going, and you wind up with a novel that's something of a satire on the sex trade. We've been thinking a lot about it recently because of the Elliot Spitzer scandal. Do you think it's something that Americans, unlike many Europeans, find it uncomfortable to deal with?
I don't know. I think that we seem to be a little bit more uncomfortable about sex than people in Europe.
Because Europeans are shocked that Spitzer lost the job, considering the fact that Mitterrand maintain two families the whole time.
Right,
he was president.
Right.
They're
certainly not going to kick somebody out of office for infidelity. You know, Spitzer
Sarkozy
is a special
had
case.
An open marriage right. Before he got divorced.
Right.
Is this the sort of thing that you can research totally on Google?
I think you can do a lot of it on Google. I think that if you write about places that you haven't been and just look at pictures of them on Google, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So I really did visit the locations of every place where this tour goes and try to imagine myself into this tour while I was on it. I, you know, in in all honesty.
You chose a lot of cold locations.
I did choose
Reykjavik.
A lot of cold.
I did. Riga.
Yes. And I was chaperoned wherever I went with either my girlfriend or my son.
At the start of the novel, Avery begins to look into internet pornography. Now, a novelist knows that imagination can be as palpable as the real thing. Do you think that applies with pornography?
I think that once you open the door to internet pornography and have that torrent of images rush at you, it's anything but palpable. It's overwhelming and anesthetizing and nauseating. I don't know that if we've ever had anything like that in human history. The fingertip access to thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of pictures of people in really almost unimaginable sexual positions.
Although there's a psychological difference between being a voyeur and actually visiting a prostitute.
There's a tremendous, and of course he crosses that line finally. It's almost that the drip, drip, drip of the pornography wears away what little tiny bit of resistance he may have had, and before he knows it, he wants to take the next step and see somebody in the flesh.
Now, Publishers Weekly has called you a master of the love story, and pretty much all of your novels have been love stories. Do you think that you'll ever need to look anywhere else for material?
I'm not sure that I've written a love story here. I think that this, and I'm not even sure, although I appreciate your saying that it's a satire on the sex trade, but I think that my subject here is more manifestly what it maybe always has been, which is to examine just our animal nature and its struggle against what we would like to believe about ourselves.
Well, it's unfair to actually put you in any kind of pigeonhole. I was looking at all the things that I had written down about A Ship Made of Paper. It's about love and its limits, about race in America, the terrors of passion, obsession, the possibility that God exists, the weight of history, about being a parent, a child, a lover, middle-aged, terrified. I mean, we go on and on and on. I guess you, no matter what topic you come up with, you can then start dealing with all of the sorts of things that drive humans.
You really can.
And the Wall Street Journal said of you, there are few novelists alive who use the English language as Scott Spencer does. Every ache of feeling, every failed effort at restraint, every attempt at self-deception is captured in precise, beautifully cadenced prose. We should make the point that you write beautifully. But how do you feel when people assume that your novels are the same things as the movies that have been made from them?
I don't know what to say about this. I feel that for the most part, people who make that assumption might not have come to my novel anyhow, so this might be a stepping stone toward it. I'm not really going to be in the position of sort of grading people's appreciation of what I do. If they want to read my book, I'm happy that they do.
Well, did the actors ever look or act in ways that you imagined them when you were creating the characters they're playing?
When I wrote, when I saw Waking the Dead and saw Jennifer Connelly play my character Sarah, I thought she absolutely nailed it. I was very, very touched by it.
And you did a cameo in that film.
I did a cameo.
And an earlier film, Endless Love, was the big break for Brooke Shields.
I'm not sure that was a break for her. I think that was really sort of a bump in the road for her, really. She was a star before then, and I think that's why they cast it. But I don't know that anybody got out of that movie alive. I think that movie hurt everybody.
Including you?
It hurt me. It hurt Franco Zeffirelli. It hurt Brooke Shields. It hurt the wonderful screenwriter Judy Roscoe. There was blood on the floor after that movie.
Well, I could see you being reluctant to sell the movie rights to this novel as a result. But it's a fabulous book, and I want to thank you so much for being with us again. Scott Spencer, whose latest is Willing. It's published by Echo.
It's great to talk to you, Len.
Scott Spencer will be speaking and signing books tonight at 7 p.m. at the McNally Robinson Bookstore at 52 Prince Street between Lafayette and Mulberry Streets. Up next, Word Maven Patricia T. O'Connor answers your questions about our wacky English language. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. And now our entire show is available as a podcast.